It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Karen Reed from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Unmuted.
Hear ye, hear ye. All persons having anything to do before the Honorable Beverly Cannoni, the Justice of the Superior Court, holding in debtum within and for the County of Norfolk. Draw near, give your attendance, and you shall be heard. God save the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. This court is in session. Please be seated.
May I call the case, Your Honor?
Please.
For the record before the court, it's Commonwealth versus Karen Reed, 22 CR 117. The parties are present. Our 18 jurors are present. The matter is on for trial.
Thank you. Good morning, counsel. Good morning, Ms. Reed.
Good morning, jurors.
Good morning.
We appreciate you here, ready, willing, and able to get started early, so we're happy about that. Thank you. I do have to ask you those questions. Were you all able to follow my instructions and refrain from discussing this case with anyone since we left here on Friday?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Were you also able to follow the instructions and refrain from doing any independent research or investigation into this case?
Yes.
Everyone said yes or nodded affirmatively. Did anyone happen to see, hear, or read anything about this case since we left on Friday? Everyone said no or shook their heads. Thank you.
Mr. Brennan, your next witness, please. Oh, Mr. Lally.
Thank you. Your Honor, I'm going to call Nicholas Bradford to stand.
Step up, face the court, raise your right hand, please.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you shall give to the court and the jury in the matter now pending shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help you, God?
I do.
Thank you.
All right, Mr. Lally, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. Morning, sir.
Good morning.
Could you please introduce yourself to the jury, spelling your last name for the court?
Yeah, my name is Nick Bradford, B-R-A-D-F-O-R-D.
And what do you do for work, sir?
I'm a DNA expert for Bodie Technology.
And where is Bodie Technology located?
In Lorton, Virginia.
And where did you go to school, sir?
I went to school at Mercyhurst College in Erie, Pennsylvania for a bachelor in forensic biology and a master's in forensic molecular biology from the George Washington University in Washington, D.C.
And following your education, where did you go to work?
I started at Bodie in about 2009.
And so did you work at Bodie prior to your graduation?
Yes.
And how long have you worked there at Bodie?
Since then, I spent 2 years at the Pennsylvania State Police at about 2021.
And when you joined Bodie Technologies, what was your position and title that you were initially hired for?
I was initially a DNA technician.
And when did you become an analyst?
In 2014.
What is the difference between a technician and an analyst?
The technicians operate the robotic equipment in the labs and assist with paperwork and various reagent duties and things like that.
And what does an analyst do?
An analyst analyzes the DNA evidence that's submitted from various police agencies from around the country. We come to court to testify and do statistical analysis of any comparisons that we might do.
Now, if you could, sir, please describe for the jury the training that you underwent initially as a technician.
As a technician, it was probably a few, maybe 2 or 3 month training process that involved various reading of the manuals for the robotics and various written and verbal exams.
Now, is there a continuing educational component at Bodie?
Yes. For DNA analysts, we have proficiency testing twice a year. We have to do a certain number of hours of continuing education, so that would be things like conferences, things like that. And we have to do scientific literature reviews, so we have to keep up with the scientific articles 4 times a year.
Now, if you could just expound a little as far as what exactly does that continuing educational component consist of, as far as the conferences and scientific literature review, what specific areas are you reviewing and going to conferences on?
Yeah, so that would be areas specific to forensic DNA testing.
Now, how many analysts work at Bodie?
Somewhere between 60 and 75, maybe.
If you could, please describe for the jury what kind of lab Bodie is.
So Bodie is a private DNA lab, and we take casework from various police agencies across the country, and we also have groups that work on international cases and things like that.
Now, you mentioned some of your work, bless you, is submitted from law enforcement agencies around the country. Is that the entirety of the work, or where does some of the other pieces come from?
Yeah, so like I said, some of it is international, and then we also do some research work as well.
Now, what type of analysis do you currently perform at Bodie?
So I am part of the customized casework group. So we take generally one-off cases or smaller, more complex cases, and then we work through those.
Now, specifically with reference to DNA analysis, can you explain to the jury, first in sort of general terms, how is that analysis performed?
Yes, so for DNA analysis, what we're trying to do is obtain a DNA profile from a piece of evidence and then potentially compare that with a reference sample from a known individual.
Now, is the Bodie Lab accredited?
Yes.
And by whom is it accredited?
Through the National Institute of Standards.
Now, within the Bodie Lab, are there certain steps that are taken to prevent against contamination?
Yes. So at every step of the testing process, we have positive and negative controls. The evidence room is a secure room, so only a handful of people have access to that room. And then everything that we would need to test, we would sign out, and that would be recorded on the chain of custody. The building itself is secure, so you need to swipe your badge to sign in. We wear protective equipment through all parts of the process, so we have gloves, goggles, lab coat, hair nets, masks, and during after we write the reports, all of our results are reviewed prior to being reported.
Now, to that point, sir, is there a review process that your work and any analyst work undergoes at the Bodie Lab?
Yes, so the final step would be a technical and an administrative review.
Now, can you describe that process as far as the technical review and review in general at Bodie?
Yes, so we submit the case file with the report and all of our conclusions, and then another analyst goes through everything and makes sure that they agree with everything that we submitted.
I think you made reference to this a little earlier in your testimony, but as part of the accreditation process, do you undergo proficiency testing?
Yes, twice a year.
And can you explain to the jury that proficiency testing process?
Yes. So twice a year, we get what's essentially a mock case submitted from an outside vendor that we treat as if it were an actual case. We go through and do all the testing that we would normally do and then submit that back to the vendor, and they compare the results to the known results of what they should be.
Now, what areas have you specifically undergone proficiency testing in?
So everything that I am trained and signed off in.
In DNA specifically, is that correct?
Yes.
And have you successfully completed each of those proficiency tests that you've taken?
Yes.
Now, you made reference to this a little earlier, but can you explain to the jury what are positive and negative controls?
Right. So positive controls we use to make sure that the various testing steps that we're performing are working as we expect. So if we have a positive control, we would expect to see the DNA profile that we intend to see in that positive sample. Negative samples we use to make sure that there aren't any sources of contamination along the way. The chemicals that we're using aren't potentially contaminated, or that maybe samples were switched or something along the way.
Now, when you were assigned work within the DNA unit at Bode Technologies, where do you retrieve that item, or where do you retrieve those items physically from?
Yes, so those would be delivered to our secure evidence room, and then any testing performed, we would need to sign that out, and that would be recorded on the chain of custody.
Now, the secure evidence room, is that temperature controlled at all?
Yes, we have just basic climate control as well as freezers and refrigerators.
And something, the freezers, refrigerators are commonly referred to as cold storage, is that correct?
Correct.
Now, why is items of evidence stored in cold storage?
Certain items of evidence are stored cold because things like heat, UV light, and moisture can cause microbial activity or degrade the DNA, so we would not get the highest quality results that we would want.
Now, when you retrieve items from the cold storage or from the secured evidence room, how are those items packaged when you receive them for DNA testing?
So they're usually, however they're packed from, like for example, the police agency that sends it to us, they'll pack them according to their guidelines and standards, and then they're sent to us and we store them in the freezer. And then when they're signed out on our end, we just have a basic container that we put them in to keep the case together.
Now, sir, what is DNA?
So DNA is basically the manual for a living organism. Most of the DNA is contained within the nucleus of every cell, or pretty much every cell. And it contains all the information that is needed to make an individual.
Now, is DNA the same in every cell of a person's body?
Yes.
And how many steps are included in DNA testing?
So forensic DNA testing, the testing that we did, there are basically four steps. So there's DNA extraction, quantification, amplification, and profile detection.
Now, can you describe for the jury what each of those steps are and sort of what they entail?
Yes. So DNA extraction is we are basically trying to separate out the DNA from everything else. So all the other parts of the cell or any other material that might be part of the evidence. So we're left with just the DNA. Next is quantification. And we are trying to figure out how much DNA we have to work with. The steps further down the line are calibrated to a certain amount of DNA input. If we add too much DNA, it can cause problems. So we need to know how much we have to work with. And then the next step is amplification. So this is when we take 20 to 25 different locations within the genome that we're interested in looking at. And we make millions and millions of copies of each of those locations. And in each one of those copies, there's a fluorescent tag that's embedded into each one. So then that leads to the final step of profile detection, where we separate those fragments out by size, and that fluorescent tag allows us to identify those particular locations.
Now, sir, in January of 2024, were you assigned to perform some work on a lab case number, your Bode lab case number, CCA-2416-0023, pertaining to this defendant, Karen Reed?
Yes.
Now, you received those items for testing from the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory, correct?
Correct.
Now, do you also, when you receive items from an outside agency, do you also receive a corresponding submitting agency case number from that agency?
Yes.
And in this case, that was Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory, lab number 22-02184, is that correct?
Correct.
Now, what type of work were you assigned to do in this case?
So in this case, I was assigned to look at an extract that was submitted from the Massachusetts State Police Crime Lab, as well as a hair, and then two reference samples that were also submitted.
Now, could you explain to the jury the process that you used to analyze, in general terms, evidence in this case?
Yes, so generally we follow that same process with the exception of the extract that was submitted. Since the extraction process was already completed, we did not need to do that and we could move straight to quantification. And then we did the entire process for the hair as well as the reference samples.
Now, you made brief reference to it a moment before, but was there a known standard that was done in this case?
Yes.
And did another analyst test and report the results from the known blood standard of John O'Keefe?
Correct.
And how was that done?
Yes, so the entirety of the testing was performed at the state lab, and they submitted the final profile to us for comparison.
Now, what is a DNA profile?
So a DNA profile is basically just a list of all the variants at those 24 or 25 different locations that we're interested in. And the entirety of those different variations are what makes a DNA profile individual or unique.
Now, as far as when you're looking or analyzing or examining a DNA profile, can you describe for the jury, what does it look like? What are you looking at?
So when we're looking at a DNA profile, it's essentially a graph with a series of peaks across the horizontal axis. And those correspond to the length of the DNA fragments that we amplified. And those are assigned a number based on the length of that that fragment. And those numbers are what we refer to as the alleles. And those numbers are assembled into essentially a chart, and that's the DNA profile.
Now, could you please describe to the jury the process of comparison between a known standard and an evidence sample?
Yes, so when we have an evidence sample, we need to compare it to a reference sample. And then, so what we do is we take those two tables that I mentioned, one from the evidence sample and one from the reference sample, and we put them next to each other and do a comparison to see if the reference profile is potentially part of the evidence profile. And then if the two are consistent, then we would need to do a statistical, calculation to determine the strength of the match. For example, if one in every three people would be potentially would be a potential match, then that's not very strong. So we need to do. So we have to have some sort of mathematical weight to describe the potential match.
Now, if you could again, sir, explain to the jury what was your role in the testing in this case.
Yes. So my role was to analyze the DNA profiles and then do the comparisons.
Now, what items specifically did you receive for DNA testing in this case?
So yes, like I mentioned, we received the hair, we received the two reference samples, we received an extract from a taillight, as well as the negative control that was associated with that, and then we also received a reference profile from the state lab.
Now, starting with what your lab has labeled as EO2, that has a corresponding State Police Crime Lab item number 3-1.1, is that correct?
Correct.
And what was the description of that item, EO2 3-1.1?
So that was the extract of the sample from the passenger side taillight of a vehicle.
And was there any further description or of that vehicle as far as a plate number?
Yes, there was a plate number associated with it.
Okay, and do you recall what the plate number was?
So that would be 3GC684.
And did you receive two buckle samples identified as RO3 and RO4?
Yes.
And what was RO3 identified as?
So that was a buckle swab from Yuri Bugetic.
And what was RO4 identified as?
So that was a buckle swab from Michael Proctor.
And then that extract portion, that was the part that was labeled as EO2, is that correct?
Correct.
And can you please explain to the jury what an extract is?
So like I mentioned, an extract is essentially, it's a tube with a small amount of liquid in it, and inside that liquid is the DNA that was extracted from the evidence sample.
Now, the known standard of Mr. John O'Keefe, that had an item number as well, is that correct?
Yes.
And what was that item number first from the State Police, Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory?
So that was 8-1.1.1.
And did your lab, Bodie Technologies, have a corresponding item number associated with that known standard?
No, we just used the Massachusetts lab number for that.
And that known standard from John O'Keefe, did that appear to be a standard single source profile?
Yes.
And what is a single source profile?
So a single source profile is essentially a DNA profile from one individual, as opposed to a DNA profile that could be a mixture of multiple individuals.
Now, what does STR stand for?
Stands for short tandem repeat.
And can you please describe that short tandem repeat process for the jury?
Yes. So like I mentioned, what we're doing with STR, short tandem repeat testing, is we're amplifying a number of locations in the genome, and then we're separating them out by size. Now, the reason we do that is because at the sort of at the DNA level, those regions of the genome have a series of base pairs of genetic base pairs that repeats over and over again in sequence. So they're short tandem repeated DNA sequences, and the number of times that that sequence repeats at that location is what we call the allele. So if the sequence repeated five times, we would call that allele five. And that the summation of all those alleles is what makes the DNA profile.
And what is an SDR mix?
So are you referring to the computer program, StarMix?
Yes, StarMix, excuse me.
Yes, okay. Yes, so when we're dealing with mixture profiles, so that would be DNA evidence profiles where more than one person's DNA is all mixed together. We need to be able to try to separate that out as best we can. We use a computer program called STRMix or StarMix, and that uses various mathematical calculations that allow us to make the best use of that mixture data that we can. And it allows us to run those statistical calculations to reference profiles as well.
Now, item EO2 from the passenger side taillight of the vehicle, what did you conclude as to that profile?
Yeah, so that was a mixture of three individuals, including at least one male.
Now, if you could, please sort of walk the jury through that process in making a profile comparison from the profile from the passenger side taillight of the defendant's vehicle and your other submitted samples.
Yes. So when we're using StarMix and we're doing a comparison, we have the StarMix output. And essentially what that's doing is we input, based on the DNA profile that we observe, the number of contributors that we would expect to be there. So in this case, we would say there were three individuals. So the StarMix software will break out those three different components and give probabilities to each different allele combination. So we would take the reference profile and then compare that to the output from the StarMix program to see if there's a potential inclusion.
Now, you mentioned a little bit about statistical calculations. How are those statistical calculations done?
Yes, so once we determine that there's a potential inclusion in the mixture, we will run what's called a likelihood ratio. So essentially what we're doing there is we're doing a likelihood ratio is a, we're comparing two different explanations for the evidence profile that we obtained. So one of those explanations would be that in this case, the DNA profile is a mixture of one of those reference samples that we're comparing and two unknown unrelated individuals. The other explanation would be that it was three unknown unrelated individuals. So we compare those two and we determine the ratio of which one is more likely.
And where do those statistical numbers or calculations, where do they come from?
So they're all based in the fact that we know how common the different alleles at each location are within the population. So we can do a lot of mathematics and figure out how rare or common different alleles might be.
Now, sir, in your comparison analysis between the taillight sample and the known standard from John O'Keefe, what conclusions did you make from your analysis or comparative analysis between those two?
Between John O'Keefe and the mixture profile, John O'Keefe could not be excluded as a potential contributor to that mixture profile.
And as far as the statistical analysis, what, if anything, did you find with reference to that?
Yes. So we did, like I mentioned, that likelihood ratio. And in the case of it being a mixture of John O'Keefe and two unknown, unrelated individuals, it would be 740 nonillion times more likely that it was a mixture of John O'Keefe and two unrelated individuals versus three unknown, unrelated individuals.
Now, that number that you just referenced, as far as 740 nonillion times more likely, how many zeros are in a nonillion?
Nonillion is 30 zeros.
Now, this analysis supported a strong support for inclusion, correct?
Correct.
Now, can you explain to the jury what that means as far as a strong support for inclusion?
Yes. So we have a chart that based on the likelihood ratio, so that 749 million number, based on the different numbers that we might get, we assign a verbal qualifier to that just to make it a little bit more user-friendly. So in this case, it would technically be very strong support for inclusion.
Now, in your comparison analysis between the taillight sample and the known standard from Yuri Buchanek, what conclusions did you make from your analysis of those?
So he could not be visually excluded based on just comparing the profile to the StarMix output. So we do the likelihood ratio to determine that, like I said, that likelihood ratio. So in this case, it was 46 million times more likely that it was three unknown, unrelated individuals versus Yuri Buchanek and two unknown, unrelated individuals. So that would be very strong support for exclusion.
And again, sir, if you could just expound a little. When you say very strong support for exclusion, what does that mean?
Again, we're just referring back to the verbal scale that we have as part of our reporting guidelines.
Now, in your comparison analysis between the taillight sample and the known standard from Michael Proctor, what conclusions did you make from your analysis there?
Yes, so he could not be visually excluded, again, based on that initial comparison. So we run the statistic, and it was 76,000 times more likely that it was three unknown, unrelated individuals versus Michael Proctor and two unknown, unrelated individuals. And that would be strong support for exclusion.
So with reference to the comparative analysis between Trooper Proctor's DNA sample and the taillight sample, that was a strong support for exclusion, correct?
Correct.
Now, turning your attention to what your lab, has labeled as EO1, that has a corresponding Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory item number of 3-6.1. Is that correct?
Correct.
And what was the description that was provided by the external submitting agency as far as that item?
So that was the shaft end of a hair from the exterior passenger side rear panel of that same plate number.
Now, as far as that, and I understand that your lab didn't do it, but you're familiar with the process as far as extracting a DNA profile from a hair, correct?
Yes.
Can you explain that process to the jury?
Yes. So during the extraction process, we dissolve the hair, and then we attempt to do our normal DNA processing.
Now, what is different, if anything, in DNA testing when it comes to hair?
So hair, generally, if it's the hair shaft only, we would not expect to get great STR results. However, it is possible, so we usually attempt that first.
Now, are you familiar with the term follicular tissue?
Yes.
And can you please explain to the jury what that is?
Yes, so that would be the hair follicle, and in the hair follicle, we would expect to find a lot of nuclear DNA. So that would be DNA from the nucleus of cells.
Now, you mentioned there any sort of piece of hair, there's a root end and a shaft end, correct?
Correct.
And can you, probably pretty well understood, but could you please explain to the jury the difference between the two?
Yes. So the root end would be the end that we would expect to find the root or the follicle, and then the shaft end would be just the shaft of the hair itself.
Now, what is autosomal DNA testing?
Yes, so autosomal DNA test. So autosomal DNA is the DNA that from mother and father that's combined in the child. So that would be opposed to DNA that's inherited directly from a single parent. So that would be something like Y chromosome DNA that would be inherited directly from the father. So all the sons of a father would have the same Y profile. Also, there's mitochondrial DNA. So the mitochondria exist outside the nucleus of the cell, and that is inherited directly from the mother. So all of a mother's children would have the same mitochondrial profile.
Now, sir, from your analysis, what were your conclusions for the hair, EO1, and your autosomal or SDR testing?
Yes. So we performed the extraction and then the quantification, and the quantification results were below the limit of detection. So we would not expect to get an STR profile from that hair.
And if you could expound just a bit as far as that term below the limit of detection, what exactly does that mean?
Yes. So during the quantification process, our instruments are calibrated as part of our internal validations to detect a certain amount of DNA. And once we get below that amount of DNA, it's determined, we call that undetermined. So that would be below the instrument's limit of detection. And based on those validations, we would not expect to get a profile from that.
And so what happened with the hair extraction sample in your lab at Bodie from there once you had completed the SDR testing?
Yes. So like I said, it's not unexpected that the shaft of a hair would not give us STR results. So we often transfer those to the mitochondrial group that does the mitochondrial DNA testing.
And why is that transferred from you to another analyst within the lab?
I'm not personally signed off in mitochondria. We don't do quite enough testing to have everyone signed off in all the different technologies.
Thank you very much, sir. I have no further questions now.
All right. Mr. Jackson?
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us. A couple quick questions. You mentioned, Mr. Bradford, a quantification related to both Yuri Bukenik and a known sample from former trooper Michael Proctor. Can we go over, I'm going to ask you about the sample related to Michael Proctor. I think I heard you say 1 in 76,000, correct?
Yes.
Describe that one more time for the jurors. When you quantify that profile, as it compares to the population of the Earth, for instance, what does that mean? What's the significance of 1 in 76,000?
Yes, so you need to be very careful when we're talking about statistics, because if we start to introduce different analogies to try to describe them, they start to go off the rails and we're describing things that are not actually described in the statistic. So it makes a lot of sense to compare that to the population of the Earth, for example. However, what we're talking about here are the relative likelihoods of those two different explanations of the evidence profile. So, like I said, in this case, it's 76,000 times more likely that we would observe that evidence profile if it were three unknown, unrelated individuals, as opposed to Michael Proctor and then two unknown, unrelated individuals.
And sometimes, Mr. Bradford, we get numbers that are just sort of mind-boggling. You said 30 zeros. What is that number again?
Nonillion.
Nonillion?
Nonillion, yes.
Y'all literally in your job, like, almost have to make up new numbers. Nonillion, none of us have ever heard of that. That's one followed by 30 zeros, correct?
Correct.
As opposed to 76,000, which is 76 followed by three zeros.
Yes.
Much, much, much smaller number by factors of a nonillion, nearly, correct?
Correct.
So when you say that there is strong support for the exclusion of Michael Proctor in that DNA sample, you're not suggesting that he's completely excluded as a potential contributor.
Well, no. What I'm suggesting is what the numbers state,
right.
So that it's 76,000 times more likely that it were three unknown unrelated individuals versus Michael Proctor and two unknown unrelated individuals.
Understood. So you're not excluding him. You're simply saying statistically there's strong support for exclusion, but he's not excluded as a contributor. Is that right?
I am saying that there is strong support for exclusion, yes.
Understood. With regard to that taillight sample, you were asked to compare known samples to that taillight sample, the known samples being State Trooper Yuri Bukenik and former Trooper Michael Proctor, those two known samples, correct?
Correct.
Were you asked to compare a known sample from a person by the name of Brian Higgins?
No.
Were you asked to compare a known sample from a person by the name of Brian Albert?
No.
Were you asked to compare a known sample from a person named Kevin Albert?
No.
Were you asked to compare a known sample from a person by the name of former Chief Kenneth Berkowitz?
No.
Thanks. All I have.
Okay, thank you. There's Mr. Lally, any follow-up?
No.
All right, you are all set. Commonwealth Witness? Okay. Your next witness, please.
Yes, Your Honor. Commonwealth to call Carl Miyasako to the stand.
Do you solemnly swear that the testimony you shall give to the court and the jury in the matter now pending shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
I do.
Good morning. Go ahead, Mr. Lally.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning, sir.
Good morning.
Could you please introduce yourself to the jury, spelling your last name for the court?
Carl Miyasako, M-I-Y-A-S-A-K-O.
And what do you do for work, sir?
I'm a senior DNA analyst at a forensic laboratory called Bodie Technology.
And where is Bodie Technologies located?
Lorton, Virginia.
And where did you go to school?
Virginia Commonwealth University.
And what degrees did you receive there?
I have a Bachelor's of Science in Forensic Science.
Now, following your education, where did you go to work?
Bodie Technology.
And how long have you worked there?
I've been employed at that laboratory for over 11 years.
And when you joined Bodie Technologies, what was your position and title that you were initially hired for?
Initially, I started off as a DNA technician.
And when did you become an analyst?
After a few years at the laboratory, I became a DNA analyst.
What is the difference at Bodie Lab between a technician and an analyst?
Technician mainly does laboratory work, and an analyst is allowed to analyze data and write reports.
Now, could you please describe for the jury the training that you underwent initially as a technician?
So I observed people perform all the tasks that I was training in, and then I'm a supervised performing tasks by a qualified individual, and then I do competency tests where I'm performing things independently.
Now, is there a continuing educational component of Bodie?
Yes.
And could you please describe for the jury what that entails?
So continuing education just allows analysts or technicians to keep up to date with current topics within the community and future advancements in technologies.
Now, could you please describe for the jury what type of lab Bodie is?
Bodie is a private accredited forensic laboratory.
And where do your cases come from?
Our cases come from different agencies throughout the country, so law enforcement agencies, medical examiners, other laboratories as well.
And is that purely on a statewide basis, national basis, or something else?
National basis.
And what is the difference at Bodie Lab or Bodie Technologies between a DNA Analyst 1 and a DNA Analyst 2?
The type of caseload and different cases being assigned to these individuals.
Now, what is your current role at Bodie Labs?
My current role is a senior DNA analyst.
And what is a senior DNA analyst, and what do you do in that role?
So senior analyst provides expertise or leadership in at least one discipline within the company. Senior analysts report challenging cases, are independent of other analysts, and also train other analysts as well.
Sir, I'm going to ask you to keep your voice up, please.
And sir, that microphone in front of you is adjustable. You can put it as close to yourself as you feel comfortable with. Thank you, Your Honor. Now, specifically with reference to DNA analysis, can you explain to the jury first in general terms how that analysis is performed at your lab?
Yeah, so it starts with receipt of evidence, and then it goes through the laboratory through different procedures up until we develop that DNA profile and it gets interpreted and analyzed.
Now, is the Bode Lab accredited?
Yes.
And by whom is it accredited?
We are accredited by ANSI, National Accreditation Board.
Now, are there steps taken within your lab at Bode to prevent against contamination?
Yeah, we have protocols to monitor contamination and to also prevent contamination.
Now, also at the lab, is there a review process, and can you sort of describe your role as it applies as a senior DNA analyst to that review process?
Yeah, so all cases go through a review process. So after, let's say, the reporting analyst completes a case, it goes into submission for a technical review. During that review process, the entire case file is looked over. So it's looked over to see if everything was done per protocol, if it's something that I or anyone else in the lab would have done, if any necessary reprocessing steps were taken. Data is reviewed. If there were comparisons, that's something that a reviewing analyst would also do and see if they come to the same conclusions as the other analysts.
Now, just again, in general terms, can you explain to the jury just a little bit more in detail as far as the protocols that a technical review is concerned with and sort of how a technical review is able to establish that the testing was done in comportment with that?
Yeah, so as me, if I were doing a technical review or look over the entire case file, did what the processing steps happen? Were they per protocol? Is it also something that I would have done in this case? If data is ultimately generated, I also do that comparison. Based on that comparison, what did I come to the conclusion to? Was that the same as the other analysts? Did we agree? Were stats done? Were they done the same way I would have done it? Essentially, all conclusions would have to be in alignment between both analysts.
And so when you're doing a technical review, you're looking at or doing your own sort of comparisons, coming to your own conclusions, and running your own statistics. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm doing the comparisons myself and seeing if I also agree and come to the same conclusions.
Now, as part of the accreditation process, do you undergo any sort of proficiency testing?
We do.
And can you explain to the jury that proficiency testing process at Bode Technologies?
So an outside organization sends tests to our laboratory. Everyone participating in these proficiency testing completes their assignment. It gets submitted back to the organization, and they review the results to see if it matches up with the expected results on their end.
And how often do analysts at your lab undergo proficiency testing?
Twice a year.
Now, turning to you specifically, what areas do you specifically undergo proficiency testing in?
Do testing within short chain and repeats, STRs, YSTRs, mitochondrial DNA analysis.
And have you successfully completed each of those proficiency tests that you've taken?
I have.
Now, could you explain to the jury what are positive and negative controls and sort of what is the difference between the two of those?
So throughout processing, we introduce controls such as a positive and negative control. A positive control is just a known template that we introduce during processing. It measures the efficacy of the testing and to see if we develop the known profile that we are expecting, just to make sure that testing went as it should have. Native Control, on the other hand, monitors for any type of contamination and cleanliness of reagents. And there's no DNA template introduced in this, so we don't expect data. So once that aligns with it, then we know that reagents used were good.
Now, sir, are you familiar with some mitochondrial DNA testing that was performed at Bode on lab case number CCA2416-0023 pertaining to this defendant, Karen Reed?
Yes.
And the lab received those items for testing from the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory, correct?
Correct.
And did you also, or do you also receive a corresponding agency case number from that or any submitting agency?
Yes.
And in this case was the Massachusetts State Police Crime Laboratory lab number 22-02184.
Yes.
And what type of work did Bode Labs do on CCA2416-0023 with respect to mitochondrial DNA testing?
So we received two evidence items, a hair sample and a reference sample, and we were asked to type these for mitochondrial DNA.
Now, could you explain to the jury the process in general terms used to analyze that type of evidence?
So it's a similar process that you may have heard already for nuclear DNA or STRs. After DNA extraction, that's where we isolate and release DNA from the sample. It goes through amplification processing. This is where we employ the polymerase chain reaction or PCR technique. So we create numerous copies of targeted section within the DNA. This is just so we have enough DNA to generate a DNA profile. Following that, we do what's called quantification. So we determine a generated estimate of how much DNA is present within the sample. Following that, we do what's called sequencing. So we used a technique called Sanger sequencing. Bases within the sample, the order bases are determined, and bases are generally are essentially building blocks of the DNA. So everyone has four bases in their DNA, and we refer to these bases to the letters A, G, T, and C. After sequencing, we go through what's called capillary electrophoresis, and so these bases are sequence individually, and the data is interpreted.
Now, was there a known standard done in this case?
Yes.
And did another analyst test and report the results from the known blood standard from Mr. John O'Keefe?
What was that? Sorry.
Sure. Did another analyst test and report the results from the known blood standard from a Mr. John O'Keefe?
Yes.
And again, with reference to mitochondrial DNA testing, what items did the Bode lab test for?
A hair shaft sample and the known DNA standard.
Now, can you please describe to the jury, again, in general terms, the process of comparison between a known standard and an evidence sample?
So we generate data from typically the evidence sample first, and then just to see that we get comparable data, and then we process the known reference standard. Then we look at the two DNA profiles of these different samples, and we compare them. Based on the data, are we seeing that we can or cannot exclude the reference donor as being a source of the evidence sample?
What is autosomal DNA?
Autosomal DNA is like nuclear DNA. It's something that you may be more, when thought of forensics, traditional STR short-handed repeats.
And what is mitochondrial DNA?
Mitochondrial DNA is a different type of DNA from nuclear DNA. Nuclear DNA, you get half of your DNA from your parents, so mom and dad, whereas mitochondrial DNA, it gets entirely inherited from mother to child.
And what is the difference between the two as far as where it's located in reference to the nucleus of a cell?
With STRs, there's basically two copies per cell, whereas with mitochondrial DNA, there are several copies per cell. So there's more abundance in mitochondrial DNA.
Now, how does that apply to an extract from a hair sample?
So for hair samples, we typically categorize these with like hairs with roots and rootless hair samples. So with hair samples typically in the shaft end, there's more abundance of the mitochondrial DNA versus nuclear DNA, where nuclear DNA tends to be degraded or not present in high enough amounts.
What does PCR stand for?
PCR stands for polymerase chain reaction.
And can you please describe the PCR method to the jury?
Yeah, so that's the process where we create specific targeted sections of the DNA over and over. So we're replicating DNA using the source material as a template. This is because we want enough copies of that DNA to generate the end result of a DNA profile. So it would be similar to, say, like a copy machine. You start with a single piece of paper and you make many, many copies from that piece of paper.
Now, sir, you alluded to it, I believe, earlier in your testimony, but just specifically as to this topic, what is DNA sequencing?
DNA sequencing is where we determine the order of bases within that sample.
And how is DNA sequencing used specifically in mitochondrial DNA testing?
So we use that to generate the sequence specific to that sample so that when we get the end result data, we compare it to a known standard or a common reference standard, and any differences from that common standard gets reported as that individual's mitochondrial profile.
Now, how is the testing different between autosomal versus mitochondrial DNA testing?
A lot of it does have some similarities, but the difference comes with STRs being more of a length fragment testing, and mitochondrial DNA is more of a base nucleotide DNA testing.
Now, as far as the running of the DNA, how is that sort of physically done, or what kind of tools are you using specific to mitochondrial DNA testing?
So we use different instrumentation, such as like a thermocycler to do the PCR step, and then we also use what's called like a genetic analyzer at the end step of capillary electrophoresis.
Is there a certain type of gel that's used as far as visualization of that profile?
Yeah, so during the quantification step, we use what's called a yield gel, and we get a visual presentation of how much DNA is present within that sample.
When you say a visual presentation, visual, like what type of instruments are you using to get that visualization?
So we use a gel and a UV light and a camera to capture essentially what we refer to as a band.
And what does that band look like?
It's generally, if there is presence of mitochondrial DNA within that sample, it emits a bright band on this gel. If there isn't anything, then we don't observe that band.
And what kind of instrumentation does your lab utilize in mitochondrial DNA testing?
We use a thermocycler 3130 genetic analyzer as well.
Could you spell that, please?
The thermocycler?
Yes.
Or T-H-E-R-M-A-L C-Y-C-L-E-R.
And then what were the digits after it?
And then the genetic analyzer is a 3130-3130.
And if you could you please describe what those instruments do or what they're used for specifically within the process of the mitochondrial DNA testing?
Yeah, so instruments is common within laboratories for automation purposes, so that thermocycler helps with the PCR stages. And then the genetic analyzer helps with the separation of the individual bases and then generating that end result data where the analyst will interpret the data.
Now, what is a D-loop?
The D-loop is the control region.
And how does that D-loop factor into this type of analysis?
So with mitochondrial DNA analysis, we analyze certain regions within the D-loop or the control region, and we refer to these as hypervariable regions, so HV1, HV2.
And what does the D-loop have to do with certain variabilities within the human population?
So this region is a non-coding region within the mitochondria, so it can allow for mutations because it wouldn't affect the mitochondria functions. Because of this highly variable difference within this region, it's useful for determining different maternal populations.
Now, did the Bode lab also perform mitochondrial DNA testing on the known standard from John O'Keefe?
Yes.
And is that mitochondrial DNA testing the same for the known standard of John O'Keefe as it is, as you've been describing, with reference to the evidence sample?
Yes.
And what is then done generally in the comparison of those two profiles?
So once we develop the profiles from these two separate sources, a comparison is done to each other, and we look at it to see if the profiles consistent, essentially matching with each other, and seeing if an exclusion or inclusion can be made.
And did you then perform your own comparative analysis of those two mitochondrial DNA profiles from the hair extracts from the rear panel of the defendant's vehicle and that of the known standard of Mr. O'Keefe?
I did.
And what is your opinion or conclusions that you arrived at from that comparative analysis?
Objection.
Sustained.
Hold on.
Ask it differently, Mr. Long.
What conclusions did you come to from that comparative analysis between those two standards?
That John O'Keefe could not be excluded as being a source of the hair sample.
Now, can you expound a little as far as your conclusion is concerned? What does that mean?
If I may refer to my report.
Yes.
So whenever we have a conclusion of a probable inclusion, like in this case where I could not exclude John O'Keefe as being a source of the hair sample, we do a statistical analysis to give weight to that probable inclusion. So in this case, using a database and with 95% confidence, at least 99.895% of the population can be excluded as being a source of that hair sample.
And let me ask you just in general terms, that database you're using is referred to as MPOP, E-M-P-O-P, is that correct?
Correct.
And what is an MPOP?
So it's a searchable database where we search mitochondrial profiles in the database and essentially to see how common or rare that profile would be seen in the population. With MPOP in our laboratory, we search three main population groups within the United States: African American, Caucasian, Hispanic. And so the general goal is just to see how rare would that profile be within these populations.
And so what conclusions did you come to with reference to the consistency of the hair sample versus Mr. O'Keefe's sample in that MPOP database?
With 95% confidence, at least 99.895% of the population can be excluded as being a source of the hair sample.
Now, you made reference in your testimony a moment before about a confidence interval. What is that?
So whenever we attain statistical data, we use a confidence interval or upper limit frequency. This is just like a range where the true value of said profile is, but we generally want to report like a conservative end to avoid any false inclusions. So it's at least 99.895% that the majority of the population can be excluded, but it could be higher, but at the lower end, it would be at least 99.895%.
And what confidence interval in your conclusion does this consistency between the hair sample profile from the rear quarter panel of the defendant's vehicle have to Mr. O'Keefe's mitochondrial DNA profile?
So it's the 99 with 95% confidence, 99.985% of the population. So the majority of the population could be excluded. However, with John O'Keefe and his maternal relatives, they could not.
Thank you, sir. I have nothing further on.
Yeah. Mr. Jackson?
Yeah, Your Honor.
Good morning, Mr. Miyasaka.
Good morning.
A couple of quick questions. Mitochondrial DNA, as you've explained, is different than autosomal DNA in pretty significant ways, correct?
Correct.
What we think of as traditional nuclear DNA, that's autosomal DNA. That's the DNA that we derive from mom and dad, comes down to the child, correct?
Correct.
Mitochondrial DNA, by contrast, is simply the maternal line, excluding the dads, correct?
Correct.
So my mitochondrial DNA has nothing to do with my father, everything to do with my mother. Is that right?
Yeah, mitochondrial DNA gets inherited from the mom to child.
Okay, so a male like John O'Keefe, for instance, the known sample that you were working with, shares the exact same mitochondrial DNA as, for instance, his mother. Correct?
Correct. His mom and any other maternally related individuals.
You just took the words right out of my mouth, and that's my next question. Stop being smarter than me. It's going to be a tough task. It's also the exact same mitochondrial DNA for his grandmother, right?
Correct.
And let's move the lineage off the trunk, the tree trunk, and move it onto branches. For instance, if his mother had two children, John and a sister, his sister would also have the exact same mitochondrial DNA, correct?
Correct.
And now, staying on that branch of the tree, going out to a leaf, if his sister had children, those children would have the exact same mitochondrial DNA.
Correct.
So another way of saying that, his maternal niece, his maternal nephew, would have the identical mitochondrial DNA as John O'Keefe, correct?
Correct.
Okay. When you indicated that John O'Keefe is included in the population of those who match that profile, that does not mean that you're determining that the hair that you analyzed came from John O'Keefe, does it?
No, with mitochondrial DNA analysis, it's not unique to individual. Compared to traditional STRs or short-chain repeat, that could be unique to individual, but with mitochondrial DNA, it's not unique to individual, but more so a maternal lineage.
All right, so Mr. Miyasaka, very importantly, you're not sitting here saying that that hair belonged to John O'Keefe.
I'm saying that the hair sample on John O'Keefe cannot be excluded as well as his maternal relatives.
So we're speaking in negatives. I want to speak in a positive. You are not saying that John O'Keefe, that hair belonged to John O'Keefe, are you? Yes or no?
Sustained.
Are you suggesting to these jurors that the hair that you analyzed belonged to John O'Keefe?
Yes.
Sustained.
Are you telling the jurors, to a reasonable degree of scientific certainty, that the hair that you analyzed belonged to John O'Keefe?
Yes.
I'll see you at sidebar.
Sure.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here. And you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready, I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? If you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. Choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woohoo!
Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.